He was struck with a sense of foreboding. The doors were standing open, huge oaken portals banded in steel, the heraldry of the von Koteburgs branded into them. Enormous chains ran from the top of each of some mechanism buried behind the iron facade. The slabs of iron that formed the doorway were colossal, 10 feet wide and half again as tall. Magda suspected they were no less imposing in their depth. How such heavy, enormous blocks of metal could have been raised to the hilltop was beyond her imagining. Legends said that Murghast predated the city, built by ancient wizardry long since forgotten by mortals. Gazing on it now, standing at the threshold of the keep, she could easily believe such tales. An aged servant in a long coat embroidered with the heraldry of Count Wulfsieg and fringed in fur stood just inside the entrance. The major domo's face was pockmarked from some old affliction, his build that of a scarecrow. His smile, when he bowed and greeted the guests, had an oily quality to it that made Magda think of charlatans and confidence tricksters.
"Welcome, honoured guests," the major domo said,
his unctuous voice crackling with age.
"Welcome to Murghast. Dinner has been prepared. If you would follow the candles, they will guide you to the dining hall. His illustrious Highness Count Wulfsieg will join you when the last guest has arrived."
Berger gave the servant a wary look. "You didn't ask our names. How'll you know when everyone's here?" The majordomo smiled.
"I have been instructed most carefully, mein Herr Berger Wolkenhorst. I know whom to expect and whom to admit. If you and mein Fräulein Magda Hausler would be good enough to repair to the dining hall, just follow the candles. If you lose your way, the other servants will set you right."
Magda gave the majordomo a lingering look. Already Berger had been proven wrong. Inside the castle was more unsettling than the courtyard. As they walked down the entrance hall, portraits of past von Koteburgs glowered down at them. Golden fixtures bolted to the walls held the guiding candles, but their flickering light only magnified the illusion of animation in the pictures. She was actually relieved when she heard angry voices drifting out from one of the side corridors.
"So sure, so certain," the words were spoken in a female voice, the tone waspish. "I tell you, I am the sensible heir."
A man's voice now, his words clipped and curt.
"So the Count invites this motley rabble to act as an audience," the woman said, mockery lacing her speech. "If he does not give me what is mine by right, I'll take it from him," the man declared. "The old fool can't have it buried with him."
Magda and Berger came abreast of the corridor. They glanced into the shadowy passageway to see the arguing couple. The woman was adorned in an opulent gown, a necklace of obsidian and ebony hanging around her neck, a diamond tiara around her brow. The man's garb was equally rich, his high boots fringed in ermine and with ivory buckles running down their sides. The buttons on his silk coat were cut sapphires, contrasting with the red hue of his vestments. Several of his fingers wore rings with jewels set into the bands of wood and bone. The largest of the rings did not bear any jewels. Instead, it had the crest of a snarling wolf's head with a star above it and a sword beside it. Berger hurried Magda along when the couple stopped their argument and glared at them.
"That was Baron and Baroness von Wurnhoer," he said. "Next to Count Wulfsieg, they might be the richest people in Ravensbach."
"What are they doing here, then?"
Magda asked. "Isn't it obvious?"
Berger said, bitterness seeping into his voice.
"The Baron isn't content to be second richest. He expects to claim some sort of legacy from Count Wulfsieg. His sort is never satisfied with what they have. They always have to try and grab more, no matter who they hurt."
Magda tried to ease the outrage she heard in Berger's words. "Maybe the Baroness is right and he won't get a thing. That would be a fine joke on someone like him." Berger smiled.
"That he would."
As they turned a corner and followed the line of candles into another hallway, his smile faltered. The grimness of the castle's dark halls closed in around them again. He gave Magda a worried look.
"I hope the joke isn't on all of us," Berger said.
There was no humour in the way he said it, but instead a severity that sent a chill down Magda's spine. The ivory walking stick smacked against the oak floorboards, sending strange echoes whispering through the hallways. The old man leaned heavily against it, each step seeming to drain the last of his strength. He paused and sought to draw breath into his shuddering body. It never felt like he could get enough air. Whatever prayers and potions were administered to him, he couldn't fill his lungs enough to sustain himself. It felt as though the left side of his body was always empty, the right a little better. His life was ebbing away, had been for years. Only purpose had maintained him this long. A purpose that would soon be achieved. A servant came forward to help him as he leaned against his stick and tried to suck air into his failing body. The old man shook the majordomo away, glowering at him from beneath his heavy brow.
"I will make my own way, Gosvin," he said. "I have walked this path 1,000 times in my dreams. Now I will do so for ill."
Gosvin bowed and backed away from the old man.
"As you wish, your illustrious highness."
Count Wolfsieg took another ragged breath. There was no sense in waiting. His strength would not return. All his delay did was buy his enemies a few more minutes. An ugly chuckle rattled through his wasted frame.
"I wonder if they appreciate how precious these moments are, Gosvin. If they only knew."
The smile the Count wore as he limped forwards once more was as grotesque as his laugh, the leer of a murderer twisting the knife in his dying victim.
"Everything is ready? They're all here?"
Count Wolfsieg asked his majordomo.
"There is one unaccounted for."
"Who? Who didn't come?"
Count Wolfsieg swung around with astonishing speed, his hand curled around Goswin's throat, tightening into a murderous grip.
Vulcan's wife,"
Goswin gasped, trying to pull free from his master's strangling clutch.
He apologized, but said she was too ill to attend."
Count Wolfsieg released him and turned away.
"The woman is of no consequence. It is her husband I want here. Notke Vulcan and his child."
He stamped down the corridor, stabbing his ivory stick at the floor as though attacking an enemy.
"They are all in the dining hall, your illustrious highness,"
Gosvin said, striding after his master.
"They have already been served."
"And the correct dishes have been placed before those who deserve them,"
Count Wolfsieg demanded. Gosvin nodded.
"Everything has been carried out fastidiously, down to the exact detail you specified."
Count Wolfsieg smiled again.
"Good. Good."
He pointed at Gosvin.
"After I take my seat, you will leave. There is a coach waiting for you in the courtyard. Send the others away. The letter I have given you will allow you to see the Grand Lector."
He laughed again, the sound causing even his majordomo to turn pale.
"After that, there will be nothing else you need to do. The Sigmarites will attend to things."
Master and servant continued on in silence. Count Wolfsieg gazed at the ancient corridors he had known as a child, that he had grown and lived in for so many years. They were hateful to him now, as cold and deathly as a mausoleum. Yes, he had lived in this castle. He had also decayed within these walls, rotted away from the inside. He couldn't remember the happiness. All he could remember was the sorrow, the emptiness, the thirst for revenge. Servants wearing surcoats adorned with the von Kurtzberg coat of arms opened the doors to the dining hall. Count Wulfsieg stomped past them. He heard Goswin tell them to leave the doors open before the majordomo followed him into the room.
"His illustrious highness, Count Wulfsieg von Kurtzberg," Goswin announced as his master walked towards his seat at the head of the table.
The dining hall was brightly lit, illuminated by massive chandeliers of crystal and silver. Candelabras glowed all along the walls, their light reflected by the brilliant polish of the oak floor. The table itself was a gigantic affair, stretching almost the entire length of the massive room. In the past, it had seated 100 guests, though now it was called upon to serve far fewer. The guests were arrayed near Count Wulfsieg's seat at the top of the table. Plates of carved dragonwood rested before each diner, and cedar bowls filled with spicy venison soup. The goblets that brimmed with ancient wine were cut from obsidian, the cutlery at each place setting of the finest malachite. At the centre of the table, the spread of exotic vegetables and sweetmeats was such as to impress the most cultivated connoisseur. In the midst of it all was the cooked body of a cicatrix, the less noxious cousin of the feared cockatrice. The enormous fowl had been prepared by a master chef, decorated so that it was as much a thing of spectacle as cuisine. Count Wulfsieg's glance at his guests was a cold one. A few of them sheepishly set down their spoons and knives, wondering if they should have waited for their host despite the protestations of the servants that they should begin without him.
"Eat, eat," Count Wulfsieg encouraged them. "If you had waited for my old carcass to hobble down here, it would all have gone cold."
He limped over to the carved seat at the head of the table. A steward drew it back for him as he sat down. He didn't look aside when he heard the doors close, but a reptilian smile spread on his visage. Goswin was leaving on his own little errand. One of the diners had stood as Count Wulfsieg joined them. He raised his goblet and turned towards the head of the table.
"You have lavished us with a magnificent feast, unparalleled by any in Ravensback."
He turned and motioned for the other guests to stand.
"Please join me in toasting the good health of his illustrious highness."
Count Wulfsieg waved everyone back into their seats.
Do me credit, Baron von Rodion, but I fear a toast to my health would be wasting good wine. I am old, friend Rold, and near the end of my days. You shall save your wishes of good health for yourselves."
Rold slowly returned to his seat.
"You are very gracious, your illustrious highness."
He looked aside to his wife and then back to the count.
"Let me say that you have ever been held in the highest regard by myself and Baroness von Wernher. I do not think there is a finer or more noble..."
Count Wulfsieg cut his speech off with a wave of his hand.
"The von Kurtzbergs are an old family," he said, his gaze roving across the table. "We were here in the terrible days when the hordes of the dark gods held these lands, when the mighty storm casts liberated this region. It was one of my ancestors who showed them the secret path into this castle so they could overwhelm the barbarians who held it. Since that time, there has always been a von Kurtzberg as master of Murghast."
The old man leaned back. His eyes stalked across the table, studying each face, glancing at the plate set before them.
"Then I am gone. There will be no more von Kurtzbergs in Murghast."
Inga Hausler spoke up, her face as beautiful as the count remembered it to be.
"Please accept my sympathy, your illustrious highness."
The smile Count Wulfsieg turned on Inga was anything but friendly.
"You may keep your sympathy," he said. "But for you, my son Hagen would be here to continue after me."
He savoured the look of shock and horror that gripped her face. Then he pointed at the rest of the diners.
Each of you had your part. The false friends who lied to my son. The sniffling jackals who thought to exploit him. All of you are to blame.
The Count stabbed his finger at the elderly scholar who sat near the end of the diners with his effete son beside him.
Notka Volkan, the chaplain, the pious man who would instruct my son in moral rectitude and would keep his soul from straying from that which is good and just.
As the Count spoke, Notka lowered his head in shame and closed his hand around the little gold hammer that hung about his neck.
Nushala, Olivia,
the Count snarled, turning his attention to the person seated opposite Notka. She was tall and thin, her skin creamy and pale. Her features had a harsh, inhuman beauty to them, and her hair was like spun gold. Gold, too, was the flowing gown that graced her slender figure, the material itself alive with enchanted motion. The elf's gaze was indifferent while she listened to Count Wolfsieg speak.
Du Verhegenstrotter, the most expensive my money could buy. Du know a dozen languages, are familiar with the art and science of fair Azir. Yet what wisdom did you teach my son? What knowledge did you fill his mind with? Your son sits next to you, Nushala. Where is mine?
Count Wolfsieg pointed again, this time at the rotund finery of a short man with a long moustache, seated with his wife and two children.
Hartmund Senf, the friend and comrade in arms. What good was your friendship and camaraderie when my son needed it most? Did you keep him from the dark path? Or did you encourage his folly?
I will not listen to this slander,
Rold snarled, throwing down his cutlery and rising from the table.
You will listen,
the Count hissed.
Baron von Rodion, the moneylender, the usurer, happy to loan Hagen whatever he needed, never concerned with what he needed it for, never wondering why he simply wouldn't ask his father for a loan.
A crackle of bitter mirth left the old man when he saw Rold slump back into his chair.
Hi. I see you do remember.
The Count swung around and pointed at Lothar Krebs.
The alchemist, seeking to wrest the secrets of the realms of its constituent components. But those components cost a great deal, don't they, friend Lothar? So when you brew up something you might be able to sell, you do not scruple about who you sell it to. Hagen was only 18 when you let him imbibe your narcotic mixture. And the more he wanted, the more it cost him. Did you even pause to consider the damage your poison was doing to him?
Captain Bruno Volkenhorst,
the Count snarled as he rounded on the former officer.
You commanded Hagen in battle, and he was proud to serve under you in the Free Guild. He looked up to you. I dare say he worshipped you. And what did you do? How did you return his loyalty and friendship? You betrayed him. You took his woman from him.
Bruno glared at the Count.
I didn't. You can't take something away that someone doesn't have to begin with.
You humiliated him in a duel. Sent him crawling back to Murkos like a whipped cur,
Count Wolfsieg growled. He swung around and thrust his finger towards Inga.
All for that wanton strumpet. Hagen loved you more than he loved himself. Oh, you were so beneath him in station. But it did not matter to Hagen. The only argument I ever had with him was when I spoke against you. For you, he would defy his own father. That was the magnitude of his love. He would have cast aside his birthright for your sake.
The Count's hand curled into a gnarled fist, which he shook at the shocked Inga.
How does you return that love?
You toyed with him, and then cast him aside, betrayed him with his closest friend.
I think you're forgetting someone,
a gruff voice rumbled from midway down the table. A pair of bearded Dwarden sat between the Krebs family and Vulcan's. The older of the two, his beard almost pure white, glowered at the Count.
Tell me what offence you imagine I've inflicted on you. What's my connection to your son?
For an answer, Count Wulfsig waved over one of his servants. He gave the steward his ivory walking stick and ordered him to take it to the Dwarden. There was visible irritation on the Dwarden's face as he took the object. As he turned the ivory stick over in his hands, his expression changed to one of shock.
This has my rune on it, he grumbled. How can this stick be bearing my mark?
It has changed since you worked on it, Cogsmith Elric Blackthumb, the Count explained. When it left your workshop, it was the frame of a very elegant, very powerful weapon.
The Count leaned forwards, his eyes glittering maliciously as he looked at his guests.
Do you believe Hagen died after a long illness?
Yes, he was ill.
Yes, it did kill him.
His mind was deluded by Lothar's concoctions and the pain of betrayal, of love rejected. So, he took that thing, he gestured to the ivory stick, and he put its barrel in his mouth. He had to use his toe to press the trigger, but when it was all finished, the shot was through. There was so little left of his face. So very little.
The old man faltered, his viciousness draining away as a haunted look filled his eyes.
That was 20 years ago, Roald argued. You can't still be.
The Baron's words broke the melancholy that had settled upon the old man. He glowered at Roald. The smile that appeared on Count Wulfsig's face was diabolical in its malignity.
You have never lost a child, have you, Roald? You have never felt the pain of that loss. The emptiness that gnaws at you, that makes every heartbeat hateful to you. Do you long for death? But there is something else you long for even more. Revenge.
Alarm swept around the table.
He's poisoned us,
came the cry. Some of the diners flung their dishes away and retreated from their seats. Others started to rush the Count, but his servants had already closed in. 4 men in the von Kurteberg livery surrounded their master with drawn swords.
Sit,
the Count commanded.
No one has been poisoned.
Do you think I would wait 20 years for such a simple retribution?
He sneered at the guests.
No, poison would be far too kind.
He clenched his hand into a fist and shook it at the table.
I will destroy you as I have been destroyed. I will destroy you through your children. You will know the crawling horror as you watch your children die. But more than die, they will come back to you, seeking your death.
The man is clearly insane,
Lothar pronounced. Count Wulfsig pounced on the statement.
Insane? Mad, am I? Mad with 20 years of hate? Mad from waiting, watching until this night for my revenge?
The old man sank back in his chair, his eyes glittering with malice.
Have you ever heard the legend of the Madag? The Skullcallers know of it, and they hold it in utter dread. It is the executioner of Khorne, the chooser of the damned. The barbarians worship it out of fear, marking sacrifices for it to claim, so that it will spare the rest of their tribe.
Never have they told an outsider how to summon the Mardag. Never have they trusted anyone with that secret.
A withering catenation racked in the Count's body.
Until now. The demon will come. The Mardag will possess a mortal host.
Count Wolfsieg pointed at the diners.
One of your children will be its host. With that body, the demon will seek the destruction of the parents. Flesh cannot sustain such a being for long, so it will possess another host once it has used up the first.
The old man's face contorted into a mask of utter hate.
On and on again the process will repeat. Blood will cry out for blood, and the halls of this castle will echo with murder. Then my vengeance will be complete.
The diseased imagining of a corrupt mind,
Nashala scoffed.
I too have heard of this demon, but I am not so credulous to accept that a mere human could ever master an entity of such terrifying power.
No, not master it,
Count Wolfsieg said.
Simply give it direction to do what it would do anyway. Korn cares not from whence the blood flows, but I do.
He swept his gaze across the table and glowered at the guests.
Of course, a blood offering is needed to set the chain in motion.
The Count dipped his hand into his coat and drew forth a long bronze dagger. He could feel the evil that radiated from the blade. He could see from their faces that the guests could feel it too. Before anyone could react, he raked the ferber across his own throat. Count Wolfsieg slumped forwards onto the table, blood gushing from his slashed throat. Steaming as it spattered across the table, the pool of gore bubbled and boiled. Soon the blood became a dark and pungent smoke that wafted up towards the chandeliers but evaporated before reaching the lights. The armed servants dropped their swords and backed away from their dying master. Count Wolfsieg lifted his head and stared one last time at his enemies. A malevolent grin froze on his face as he dropped back onto the table. Far off, from the temples down below in Ravensback, bells began to ring. They were noting the setting of the sun and the advent of night, but to those inside Murghast they seemed to be a dirge for Count Wolfsieg and the von Kurtebergs, a dirge for the man who had damned them all with his final breath. Chapter 3 Magda put her hand to her mouth to stifle her cry as she watched Count Wolfsieg's horrific demise.
The man was mad,
Rold pronounced, breaking the momentary spell of silence.
His claims were mad, his schemes were mad.
He wagged his finger at the corpse.
There is all the proof you need. A madman with more wealth in his coffers than wits in his head.
Hartman dabbed his napkin across his sweaty brow.
Yes, yes, the Count was mad,
the merchant hurriedly agreed.
His claims completely outrageous.
Magda turned to her parents. Inga had a strange look in her eyes, an expression she had never seen there before. Was it regret or guilt? Surely it wasn't shame. Beside her, Otker was tapping his finger against his obsidian goblet. His face had a sickly pallor, but his eyes weren't bleary from wine. They were clear and focused and hurt. He didn't raise his glass. It seemed he had no taste for wine right now.
Call the Count mad if it makes you feel better, Nushala said,
her fine elfin voice wafting across the table like doleful music.
But he was not so mad as to not know what he was speaking of. From his perspective, I failed to instruct his offspring correctly. I am not so ignorant of humans that I cannot see that each of you agrees with what he said about you.
She raised her slender hand as Rold clenched his fist.
Whatever your protestations, each of you feels guilty inside for what the Count laid at your feet.
Alric's son, Brond, kicked his chair away and glowered at the elf.
And what about you, tall ears? The Dwardin growled. You admit you failed the Count's whelp?
Nushala simply shrugged, the living gold of her gown rippling with the motion. A human mind can little appreciate the nuances of instruction. They operate upon such a shallow level. She brushed aside her son's hand when he tried to keep her from continuing. It must be said that humans simply cannot understand anything that rejects their preconceptions. That the labour of a few decades or even a few centuries is of no consequence. Of course I feel I failed to educate the boy. How could it have been otherwise? He could barely appreciate the surface of knowledge, much less plunge into the deeps of true wisdom.
Arrogant, insufferable, miserable elves, Birnga said suddenly. You sneer down your nose at the work of men. What great things has your kind ever accomplished? Slinking about with puffed-up airs while enjoying the protection of whoever you can exploit. You're half witch and half demon. It's no wonder you would laugh at a dying man's curse.
It would be unwise for any of us to laugh at Count Wulfsig's curse, Notka said. The former priest clenched the gold hammer he wore so tightly that his knuckles turned white. The demon he named is real. It is named in the Liber Demonium as one of the profane blood god's most monstrous visitations. A remorseless spectre, an elemental force of death. Not the clean death that must come to all mortals, but the unholy slaughter that rends the soul. It is not the underworlds of Nagash to which the spirits of its victims descend, but rather the endless torment of the blood god's obscene domain. Lothar rose from his seat and made a placating motion with his hands.
I fear you antagonize these good people to no purpose, Vulcan. Your knowledge of the names and character of demons may be extensive, the alchemist smiled, but I fear you are forgetting that in magic, even the blackest magic, there are always rules, rituals that must be followed exactly in order for the sorcery to manifest. Count Wulfsig spoke.
What does any of this matter? Inga cried out. She pointed to the corpse at the head of the table. How can you all keep talking with that lying right beside you? Magda had seen her mother's agitation swelling, her eyes darting back to the Count's body, her lips trembling with horror. Bruno spoke up in agreement.
The lady's right. Perhaps we should talk this through, but it's obscene to do so while our late host is in our company.
You there, Rold called out to the valets. See to your master.
When they hesitated, the Baron fixed them with his most imperious glare.
Do as I say.
You had better do as my husband requests, Hiltruda warned them. At least if you hope to find another position somewhere in Ravensbach.
The threat overcame the servants' trepidation, and the men took hold of the dead Count. Magda watched in morbid fascination as they gathered up the corpse, taking pains to wrap the head in a napkin, as if in fear that it might fall off. One of the valets paused beside the hideous knife. He snatched the napkin from in front of Ottokar and used it to recover the weapon. The men soon withdrew with their gruesome burden. Nishala motioned to Lothar.
Before you were interrupted, you had been saying something about how magic works. I should be very interested to be educated on the subject.
Lothar gave the elf a dark look.
I was simply reminding everyone of what the Count claimed would happen. That the demon he would conjure would infest our children, one by one, and that through them it would seek to murder us.
He paused as several of his companions gasped.
A horrible thing to claim, but I assure you, well beyond the man's ability to make reality.
The alchemist stopped and turned to Notka again.
Mind you, I am only speaking from theory rather than practice. I should hardly enjoy leaving here to find the Order of Azir waiting at my home.
Forget about witch hunters and get to the point, Rold snapped.
Magda wasn't taken in by the Baron's veneer of superiority and position. He seemed to be on the verge of losing all restraint and running from the room.
The point, Baron von Wernher, is that there are certain occult rituals that must be observed to make a physical host ready for a demon.
Lothar raised his glass.
Before you can pour the wine, there must be a suitable vessel to receive it. There would also need to be an incantation to summon it.
Magda's eyes went wide at Lothar's words. Something that had struck her as strange earlier now came back to her with monstrous implications. When we were seated, she said, she looked at her parents. Remember, when the steward showed us to our places? Inga's voice was sharp with tension. He simply said our names and indicated the chairs we were to take. No, that isn't right, Birger said. He looked to his father for confirmation. When he showed you to your seat, he said, this is your chair. But when myself and Magda were shown in, what he said was, Birger Volkenhorst, accept the place prepared for you. Those were his exact words. Magda nodded. That's what he said to me. Magda Hausler, accept the place prepared for you. But he did not use those words when my parents were seated. Other affirmations came from around the table as the children of Count Wolfsieg's guests recalled the manner in which they had been seated. Rold turned and fixed the servants with a demanding look.
Where is that steward? I want him to account for this.
The servants looked among themselves. Finally, one of the maids stepped forwards.
Please, your lordship, but Herr Goswin isn't here.
Well, find the cur, Rold snarled. I want him to explain this foolishness.
He glared at the servants until they hurried off to find the absent majordomo. Lothar gave Magda a patient smile.
You think such an innocent phrase can conjure a demon?
There was a cynical mockery in his tone that caused her to scowl back at him. In the best circumstances, she had no tolerance for that kind of patronising smugness.
I should not be so quick to dismiss the possibility, alchemist, Nashala said, her tone as haughty as Lothar's. The ritual might have been performed before we arrived, left incomplete, waiting for the final... I am not sure there is an adequate concept in your philosophy, so let us say... consecration. With those mundane words spoken by Goswin, whatever curse Count Wolfsieg plotted may have been brought to fruition.
Notker banged his fist against the table.
No!
He shouted. It cannot be! Mighty Sigmar has confounded the ruinous powers. They cannot manifest except in flesh that has been marked for the dark gods. He shook off his son's hand as he slammed his fist again and again on the table.
None here could be so abominable as to have the mark of chaos upon them.
Notker was in what amounted to a fit now. One hand clenched the hammer icon so tightly that blood dripped from his fist. The other continued to pound the table. Plates and bowls were jostled by the vibrations. Those in front of his son, Reyna, were appended and spilled to the floor. Hartmann's daughter reached down to recover the fallen objects. Herr Linda set the bowl on the table, but as she picked up the plate, the girl screamed and threw it across the room. Shrieking, she cowered against her mother, unable to speak for the frightened sobs racking her. Brond moved from his chair and walked over to the plate. He picked it up, and as he did, his expression became dour. He hurried back to the table and seized the plate he had been supping from. Tossing the remaining food on the floor, he turned it over and stared at the underside.
"What is it?"
Alric asked. Magda wasn't certain, but she thought she could see anxiety in the Dwardin's eyes. The younger Dwardin didn't answer. He simply turned both plates over and showed their undersides to the rest of the guests. Drawn upon the bottom of both plates was a grisly sigil.
Sigma, preserve us!
Siguna Senth cried and held her daughter close. The skull rune of Khorn, Nushala gasped, her shock such that the elf forgot her lofty arrogance.
The mark is not upon the flesh, Lothar proclaimed. It has been taken into the flesh. Whatever was set upon the plates was consecrated to the blood god, and by eating it, by consuming the food, the mark was drawn into.
He swung around and turned over his own plate. A sigh of relief rose from the alchemist when he found that there was no mark. All around the table, others were upending their settings, checking their plates, bowls, cups, even cutlery for the gruesome symbol. It soon became clear that only the plates had been touched, and only certain plates. Magda sat shivering as she gazed upon the grotesque rune drawn upon hers in blood. She looked across the table and saw Birnga gazing at his own plate in a kind of numb horror.
All of the children, Hartman stated. He marked only the children's plates, and the steward only recited those words when he seated the children.
Nashala turned to her son. Did you eat anything? Abraham dipped his head in reluctant acknowledgement. The question, however, provoked an immediate reaction from Roald. Lunging from his chair, he seized his daughter by the shoulders.
You didn't eat anything, he said. Tell me you didn't eat anything, Liebgarde.
Hiltruda stood up and cracked her hand across Roald's face. He rubbed at his cheek while she knelt beside their daughter.
It is no good pretending. All of us are at the same risk. All of our children ate from their own plates.
The demon will come, Notka groaned. There were tears in his eyes as he looked at Rayna. It will do what Count Wolfseeger called it to do. It will kill all of us through our own children. Magda was surprised when her father suddenly stood up. Otto gave a sad, wistful smile, then turned and spoke to the others at the table.
May I ask one thing? If we accept that there's some murdering demon coming to possess our children, then why, by all the underworlds, are we just sitting around waiting for it?
Lothar seized the idea.
To call a powerful demon requires everything to be exact. That includes the place in which it is expected to manifest.
Murghast was once used by the barbarians as a citadel, Bruno said. Even now it has a sinister quality to it. Surely all of you have felt it.
A residual taint, Nashala said. A trace of chaos that has seeped into the very walls. The least echo, biding its time to be awakened again.
The elf shook her head.
Yes, such a place would ease the passage of a demon.
Then if we are in agreement on that question, Hiltruda said, let's stop wasting time and get out of here.
Of everyone who had spoken, Magda thought the Baroness made the most sense. Birnga was close behind his father as they left the dining hall. Hiltruda's suggestion had been taken with nary a protest. Indeed, the only voices that had been raised in objection had been those of the Dwardin and Bruno Volkenhorst. Birnga had little experience with the Iron World, as it was generally considered a bad idea to steal from the stocky Dwardin. As famous as they were for the quality and craftsmanship of their wares, they were equally infamous for the excessive vindictive streak that seemed ingrained in every one of them. Slight a Dwardin, and they would bear that grudge against your grandchildren's grandchildren. Alric and his son, wanting to stay and somehow make a stand, struck Birnga as sheer obstinacy more than anything else. Why Bruno wanted to remain was more of a puzzle, but then Birnga had learned things tonight that he had never known about his father. It was clear that Count Wolfsieg's accusations about Bruno and Inga were closer to the mark than not. he wanted to ask him about his version of what had happened, whether he had truly betrayed Hagen, or if that part of it was merely the Count's bitter interpretation. It would be an impolitic subject to broach, but Berger needed to know. He needed to understand the specifics of whatever had happened between Bruno and Magda's mother.
"Thunder and hammer!"
rolled Kirst as he led the group away from the dining hall. "Where are those damn servants?"
"Looking for Goswin, your lordship," Lothar reminded him. "Don't you remember sending them all away?"
Roald turned his scowl from the five corridors that led up to the dining hall and fixed the angry look at Lothar's sardonic face.
"One of the swine could have had sense enough to stay behind."
Berger frowned at the nest of hallways. "Does anyone remember which corridor we came down?"
"This one,"
Roald declared, and started for the centermost hallway. Like the others, it was dimly illuminated by a few sputtering candles. There was no trace of the bright displays that had served to guide them before. The two elves headed for the inner left passage, their raiment of living gold writhing about their tall, lean frames.
"It is this one," Nashala said.
Hartman barked with scornful laughter.
"We're just going to follow an elf on her say-so. Probably in league with the demon, leading us to it so they can bargain with it and save their own lives."
Several of the others took up the merchant's track, casting their own aspersions on the trustworthiness of elves. Magda wasn't one of them.
"You've nothing to justify such claims, Herr Senf," she said. "Only rumour and superstition."
"The lass is right," grumbled Alric,
his face looking as though he'd swallowed something repugnant.
"You can call an elf a flouncy fop without the metal for honest work, but you can't question that snare-trap memory they have. If an elf tells you it was raining at a specific hour 4 years ago, then you can bet it was raining. If she says this is the way, this is the way."
Nashala gave the entire group an indifferent stare.
"Follow me or don't. If you want to get lost in here, it's no difference to me."
With her son following in her wake, she started off down the left hallway.
"Well, that convinces me," Ottokar declared.
He took hold of Magda's hand and led her after the elves. Inga was close behind them, asking the swordsmith if he was sure, but receiving no answer. Berger looked at his father.
"Let's follow them," he said. "If anything's wrong, they'll need help."
Bruno gave Berger a wry look, but finally nodded. His hand fell to the sabre he wore, another relic from his days as a Free Guild captain.
"I've heard it said it takes a blade of cold iron to hurt an elf. If those two are up to anything, we'll put that to the test."
Berger and his father set off, joined by the Dwarden. Soon the rest of the guests were following down the hall. Berger could hear Roald complaining that they were going the wrong way, but the Baron's objections weren't enough to keep him from following them. Berger quickened his step and hurried to join the Houselers. Inga gave a start when he caught up to them, her mind clearly on other things. Ottokar nodded by way of greeting. Berger felt a warmth flash through him when Magda turned and smiled at him.
"Father and I were concerned. If Nashala is planning any..."
"They say an elf can hear an ant crawling up a leaf from a mile away," Ottokar said. "You may want to be a bit more guarded with whatever you wanted to say."
Embarrassment coloured Berger's cheeks.
"I just wanted to say, whatever happens, my father and I will help."
He glanced at the sword hanging from Ottokar's right hip.
"I can use a blade."
"So can my father," Magda said, anger tinging her words. "For that matter, so can I."
"A graceless conceit for a young lady," Inga said. Her anxious gaze swept the stark iron walls around them and the grim portals of old von Kurteberg's glaring down at them.
"Though, right now, I begin to think..." She smiled awkwardly at Magda and then quickly looked to Ottokar.
"Don't be foolish. Give your sword to this young man. He has two good arms to use it." Bunga did not think he'd ever seen someone's expression descend into complete fury as quickly as Magda's did when she heard Inga's words. Such was her rage that she couldn't speak, only stare in mute abhorrence. Ottokar simply shrugged, a peculiar motion since it failed to do so much as shake his right arm.
"I'll trust no hand but my own to guard my daughter," he said, his eyes strayed over to Bunga. "I thank you and Bruno for all the help you care to give, but while I can still draw and slash, I'm keeping my sword."
Bunga was struck by the intensity of the swordsmith's voice. The sot who had staggered around in the courtyard was gone, only some faint echoes of his presence lingering on in the corners of Ottokar's eyes.
"I'll support you in whatever way I can."
"Don't be stubborn," Inga argued. "You aren't the brash duelist anymore. The boy can do more with that sword than you can." The anger that had been boiling inside Magda burst forth.
"Maybe, Mother, if you had a loyal thought in that strumpet brain, you would appreciate Father. Hagen, Bruno, how many other men have you enjoyed? That cogsmith didn't bring a wife with him."
"Don't speak to your mother in that way,"
Ottokar snapped. He waved his hand at the next turn in the hall, where a flash of gold was just disappearing around the corner.
"If we keep bickering, we'll lose sight of the elves."
The little group continued on in silence. Bunga could feel the anger rolling off Magda and Inga. The daughter kept directing black looks at her mother. The few glances she turned his way were little better. Resentment over whatever past association Bruna had with Inga, he decided. He wondered how long that relationship had gone on. Was it after her marriage to Ottokar? Bunga looked back and waved to his father. He gestured to indicate the corner they were turning. Bruno acknowledged the direction and said something to the Dwardin. Farther back, the rest of the guests advanced in a bunched crowd. Bunga strained, but he couldn't hear Rold grousing over his injured pride. Perhaps the Baroness had finally told him to shut up. Turning the corner, Bunga was surprised to find that Ottokar had drifted back, waiting for him. There was a grave look in his eyes as he regarded him.
"If anything happens, promise me you'll get them out," he whispered, jerking his chin at Magda and Inga.
The two women were about 10 feet ahead of them, hurriedly pursuing the elves.
"I will,"
Bunga said, the words coming before he really gave thought to what they might entail.
"I'll get them out."
Ottokar slowly followed his family.
"Promise me you'll keep Magda from... If I can't go with her, you have to make her accept that."
A strange, sad smile appeared on his face.
"She's always been headstrong. Takes after me in all the wrong ways."
"I'll get her out,"
Bunga assured him. His eyes drifted to the swordsmith's silver arm. A horrible thought came to him. It was spoken before he could restrain himself.
"Your arm. Did you lose it in a duel with my father?"
Ottokar slapped his false arm, the hollow ring of the silver shell echoing down the hall. Magda and Inga looked back, worry in their gaze.
This was much later, and it wasn't your father who was responsible. Bruno Volkenhorst was a fearsome swordsman, but if we'd ever crossed blades, you might not be here today. No, this wound came from someone else. Someone who didn't scruple about cheating.
He gave Bunga a reassuring pat on the shoulder.
Bruno was never the sort of man who could beat me, and he wouldn't cheat in a fight. The man who did this did it for money. He's dead now, and the man who hired him lost interest soon after.
What was the issue? Bunga asked.
I've told you what I've told you to allay worries about your father's integrity, Ottokar said. The rest doesn't concern you.
He strode forwards to join the women.
Hang back a bit so the others don't get lost. But see that you keep us in sight as well.
They turned down 2 more side passages before again reaching the main hallway. Bunga could see the elves ahead of them. Nashala was speaking with a group of 20 or so servants who were clustered in the middle of the hall. Beyond them, just visible at the end of the corridor, was a bright glow. For a moment he was confused. It should be early evening. There couldn't be any sunlight in the courtyard. Then his ears caught the faintest trace of sound. It was the low murmur of many voices. Abraham turned when Birnga and the Houselers approached. It was difficult to read the elf's face, but it seemed to him there was a certain grimness in his visage.
The Count's servants tried to leave the castle. They were stopped.
You stopped them? Magda asked. The elf took a moment to answer her.
No, my mother and I came afterwards.
He gestured to where Nishala crouched over the prostrate figure of a coachman. The man's cream-coloured vest was stained crimson by the oozing wound in the middle of his chest.
Bullet, Ottokar said. Who shot him?
One of the maids shook a trembling hand at the end of the corridor.
They did. The men from Ravensback.
They said no one could leave the castle, elaborated a cook. They said they'd kill anyone who tried.
They won't keep us here, Ottokar snarled.
His left hand curled around the grip of his sword. Inga grabbed him, pinning his arm between their bodies.
Don't be a fool, she cried. Wasn't enough to be shot once?
The remark brought a flash of pain to Ottokar's expression, but also dulled the reckless heroism of a moment before. He pressed his lips to Inga's.
If I thought I could buy you time to get away, I'd do it gladly, he said.
We wouldn't leave you,
Magda insisted. She gave Inga an imploring look.
Tell him we wouldn't leave him.
When her mother remained silent, she pushed her away and gripped her father's arm.
We wouldn't leave you, she vowed.
Ottokar raised his hand to his daughter's head, running his fingers through her hair. Birnga looked back at the coachman.
Can you do anything for him? He asked Nishala.
The elf gave him a curious look. A chill rippled through Birnga. Until he'd said something, had it not occurred to her to try and aid the man? Nishala's long fingers pulled back the bloodied garment and exposed the ugly wound.
You'll be wasting your time,
Ulrich grumbled gruffly. The cogsmith had reached the cluster of servants and was now standing over the coachman.
I know you tall ears have enough time to waste it, but some of us don't.
The Dwardin pointed at the bits of tissue that peppered the man's vest.
Bullet smacked right through a lung. He must have been hit from up close.
Otto was shot by one at the Free Guild, a valet stated. Couldn't have been more than 6 paces between them when he fired.
Free Guild?
Bruno asked as he joined them. The other Dwardin stepped in to join Ulrich.
The castle's been sealed off, Birnga reported, waving at the servants. Men from Ravensback are in the courtyard and have threatened to kill anyone who tries to leave.
Audacious, Nishala proclaimed as she rose to her feet. I should like to see them try.
She turned, looking as though she might march straight to the courtyard. Abraham laid his hand on her shoulder, holding her back while the two conversed in their lilting language. Inga walked over to the elves.
It might be best to wait for Baron von Vernher. He's a man of importance in Ravensback. Surely these men in the courtyard will listen to his authority.
Nishala turned a withering look on Inga, but there was gratitude in Abram's eyes.
Let the stupid little man have his moment of importance, Nishala said.
What about the coachman? Birnga asked. Maybe the alchemist could...
Ulrich shook his head.
Lad, unless Lothar is also a necromancer, there's nothing he can do now. The man's dead.
Some of the maids began to cry as the cogsmith made his pronouncement. A butler stepped forwards to drape his coat over the corpse. The remainder of the dinner guests came marching towards the macabre scene.
What happened to him?
Hartman asked, his voice becoming shrill as he noted the blood on the floor beside the body.
Damnation take the wretch!
Roald exclaimed,
The Baron glared at the surviving peasants.
Where is Goswin? Have you found the scoundrel?
Magda stalked over to Rold.
We have bigger problems, your lordship, she said, twisting the address so it sounded almost profane.
Soldiers, men from Ravensback, have assembled in the courtyard. They aren't letting anyone leave the castle.